Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges. And they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Today on the Zabecast, as a relatively new dog owner, I can tell you I've now been baptized with the first awful feeling of that whole thing. Little Tucker went running off the grid. Details of his rescue in moments. Ron Thomas joins me and we'll talk about the Ben Hogan documentary on Golf Channel, basketball life, and more. Plus, pour one out for one of the OGs of Bristol, Connecticut, Bob Lee. Your digital dose of Extra Me is fresh and ready to eat. So buckle up and let's go.
Oh, here we go.
Thursday, June 27, 2019. Thank you for joining me and thanks for the download. Let's get right to it. Boy, oh boy, don't ever lose a dog. Now, I'll cut to the chase. We got our dog back, young Tucker, and by we, I mean my wife, who went to heroic lengths to chase him down deep into the thickets and the brambles and the bushes of the acreage and beyond of where we live. My God, she went after him good and got him finally. I don't say I was useless, but I was slow on the uptake of, oh God, he's running away and he's not coming back. So, as you know, we have a young dog by the name of Tucker. He's 2-plus years old, coming up on 3, I believe. A field spaniel, just a little brown, cute, little soft as a daisy rocket of a dog. He can really go after frisbees. Great. And I am the frisbee master. So, I've got the Kong frisbee, the flexible rubber frisbee, and I'll give it pretty much the hardest huck I can give from my porch and then watch him chase after it. And he can run down just about anything I throw to him. It's pretty impressive. Now, I get him back to me, and I've kind of trained him on this by having a little treat in my pocket, and I make him bring the frisbee back. I, you know, put the frisbee on the ground. I say, stop, wait, down, and then I put the treat on the frisbee, and then he comes and he gets the treat. And that usually brings him back. Now, in this particular instance, it was a cavalcade of things going wrong, one after another, that led to this near disaster. The first thing was I was out grilling a piece of fish, and my wife was out there as well, and I go and throw the frisbee. Tucker goes chasing after it. I didn't have treats on me, and I disappeared around the corner to go tend to putting the fish on the grill. Well, because I wasn't standing there holding my hand with the treat in the air, yelling, Tucker, all right, treat, come on back, he started smelling the country smells. you know, deer poop here, dead animal over there, who knows what. And so he starts roaming around the 10 acres that we have. Okay, let's not panic. He'll come back. He's done it before. Starts going further and further away, not listening to mom. Mom is out there trying to get him. I now go and get the bag of treats, and I'm shaking the treat bag furiously from afar, going, Tugger, Tugger, come here. Nothing. He then takes off running down the hill towards the far corner of the property, down where there's a stream, and our neighboring property, which is waist-high bramble brush and woods. Oh, fuck. He takes off into the woods. My wife starts running after him. I, like, run halfway down the hill. I yell, do you got him? She yells back with that panicked voice, no. I said, what do you want me to do? She goes, I don't know. At this point, my heart is in my throat, and I'm just going, oh, shit. So, of course, I had taken my socks off because I thought I don't want to get my socks wet on the wet grass while I go just out to the edge of the top part of the lawn to go get the dog back, and I'm in bare feet. Now it's full-blown panic. Time, there is no time for anything. There's no time for me to go find shoes, get shoes, put sack, nothing. So I run into the garage, I get the golf cart out, and I go tearing down the hill into the brambles in the golf cart with bare feet on. So if I had to dismount from the golf cart, I'd be really fucked. I mean, it would have been a nightmare of epic proportions. I go into the brambles, into the neighbor's property. I can barely see the trail where my wife had waded through all this stuff. And luckily, I didn't get the cart stuck in a ditch. It didn't run out of battery, although it almost did. And I'm going deeper and deeper, going, oh, my God. And of course, this is it in the evening time. So we had a couple hours of daylight. But, you know, we don't have a GPS tracker on his collar. He really isn't trained as well as he should be to be off-leash running around the country like this. We don't have him trained to come to a whistle. It was bad. Luckily, my wife, a good 800 yards into the neighbor's property, had somehow tricked him into coming back. I think she said the word dinner. That's the one word he responds to because, like all dogs, they've associated that word with, ooh, food. So she yelled out, Tucker, Tucker, you want dinner? And he came running to her. And she was able to then take her sweatshirt, a light sweatshirt she had on, and tie it around his collar as a pseudo leash. And that's when I arrived in the golf cart. And man, I have never been so relieved as that. First time we've ever really lost the dog. I mean, big time lost the dog. And this is something that every dog owner goes through. And so I'd enjoy some feedback and some tips and everything. Obviously, we need better training. We got to put them back in dog school. We need to invest in a GPS collar, and we're going to have to be more careful about, you know, where I play Frisbee with him and everything else. Just keep a sharper eye on him. I worry that now he's seen the big country. He knows it's out there, and he's going to want to go back there as soon as we get him out off leash, which could be a problem. I'm going to keep him on the leash, just take walks with him for about a week before we go back to playing Frisbee, and hopefully he's forgotten about the wild world beyond. But he's a dog. Dogs are going to do what dogs do. Oh, and I forgot to mention, this was the hell of all of it, is that the dog really is my youngest daughter Megan's dog. That's her boy. She's away right now at Spanish camp for the summer, for at least the next 3 weeks. Not for the summer, but for 3 weeks. And we have no communication with her either. It's one of those camps where it's like you turn over your cell phone and you are incommunicado. I'm thinking to myself, I it'd be traumatic enough if we never saw Sweet Tucker again. And then I'd have to tell my daughter when she gets home, oh, hey, it's great to have you back. Yeah, where's the dog? He sort of ran away. What? We'll get another dog. Oh, the heartbreak. And I know what you're going to say as veteran dog owners. Remember, I'm a noob. We're noobs. This is our first dog. You think this is hard? You're saying to me? Wait till you have to put one down. I know. I'm going to gird for that day, and hopefully we'll make it through. Couple of quick hitters, and then Ron Thomas swings on in to talk about basketball, life, the Hogan documentary, which was on the Golf Channel. If you saw it, I think you'll enjoy our mini book club. If you haven't, I highly recommend it. if you hate golf, you can fast forward if you want, or just listen. You might pick something up from Ron and I, even as somebody who doesn't play golf. And then also, I got one kicker story at the end, as always. Quick email, and I always like feedback, zabe@yahoo.com. This one from Ryan Brandt. Ryan Brandt. Not Ryan Grant, but Ryan Brandt. Zabe, I hope all is well with you and your crazy schedule. Yes, I'm fitting into the schedule, I think, quite nicely. I wanted to chime in on your baseball topic with Mr. X. As a former baseball fan, I actually enjoyed this topic, much more so than when you talk golf and NBA. I was a huge baseball fan growing up, but now at age 52, I find it extremely boring to watch. All the messing around between pitches is beyond ridiculous. Recently, I was waiting for a buddy at a bar, nothing else to do, and so I started timing the pitches. On one particular at-bat, there was a 26-second gap, a 34-second gap, and a 27-second gap between pitches, with absolutely nothing going on during that time. Well, I went back on a lark to the 1984 Jack Morris no-hitter against the White Sox on YouTube, the uncut version, and I timed it. 12 seconds, 16 seconds, 14 seconds. This is the biggest problem in and on the field. The product in baseball, in my opinion, is too damn slow. People say, but what about all that time between plays and football? I counter with, well, at least they show you replays of what just happened, making those 40 seconds between plays go down not so painfully. Not only that, but there's at least a play, even a boring 3-yard dive, is more exciting and more interesting and more nuanced than a pitch that is 2 inches out of the strike zone called a ball. I know that the NHL, by the way, Zabe, doesn't move the needle for you on a national level, but I really do miss you talking hockey. You have a great knowledge of the game, and I was actually happy for you last year when the Caps won, because that meant more hockey talk. Anyway, I'm just disappointed that Tom Wilson had to win a Stanley Cup. Keep up the great work. Sincerely, Ryan Brandt. Well, thank you. I know just enough hockey to be dangerous. I know it from having played street hockey as a kid and going to Caps games a lot, and then by playing a little bit of rec league hockey. I don't keep up on it as much as Scott Lynn does these days. I don't know any of the advanced concepts of it, but I know enough to be dangerous. I know enough to be passionate. I know enough to watch these guys and go, oh, fuck, was that an amazing play. But it's a tough sell to the casual fan. In fact, I don't think there is such a thing as a casual hockey fan. There was a story that a lot of people are snarking on Twitter, which I think is funny. A woman who claims to have married a 300-year-old pirate admits they are now breaking up.
Arrgh, yeah. It just didn't work out, matey.
People are weird. And there are weird fetishes and weird love affairs. And I've seen the episodes, the TV shows about weird addictions and whatnot. And maybe this was a genuine sort of thing. It might have just been a cry for attention or a work to get internet famous for 5 minutes. Who knows? But there was a couple of good responses. One was, they'll miss each other's booty, but in very different ways. Aha! And then there was, respect my piracy at this time. I like it. It's a play on words. It's a pun. It's well done. All right. With that, we say hello to our man, Ron Thomas.
Hello.
Hello, Ronnie boy.
Hi, Steve.
Got your theme music playing in the background. Unfortunately, my machine does not feed music down the line.
That's all right.
You'll hear it. You'll hear it when you. I know. You'll hear it when you do your narcissistic re-listening of yourself on my podcast.
Very rarely, but on occasion.
I'm just kidding, man. You're entitled to do that. I'm at the point now where it's like, Jesus, if I hear any more of me, I'm going to vomit. I hear myself live for 6 hours a day plus the Zabecast. The last thing I need is to listen to me more. But anyway, good to talk to you, Ronnie. How are you, bud?
Speaking of that, do you ever get tired of talking?
No.
You don't? At home, what's it like at home? I mean, is there ever, why aren't you talking? And do you say, well, because I don't want to.
I've talked enough today?
Yeah.
No. I mean, I you know, no, it's really not, that. I mean, I guess there are times. It's more, the talking is not it. It's just the sleeping. You know me, Ron. You and I are brothers from another mother. We're soulmates in a way, in that we are romantics, but we're cynics. We're also very fascinated by the world around us, and we're fascinated by people, and we're fascinated, both you and I, by things we don't know anything about. And so in such a world, it's not hard to talk a lot or to ask a lot of questions of people, because you learn stuff, you know?
How about when you're in Milwaukee and you're going out on sales calls and meeting new people, three a day, you said, at times. Yeah. I know you're doing it for the sales call. And
I got a request from somebody saying he's a sales guy. He's like, I'd like to hear about some of those visits. Can I share one or two with you real quick? Take 2 minutes? Yeah.
Yes, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah. No, I met a family-run business called Mander Collision. And they're a collision shop, and it's a father-son business, actually third generation. And the dad, who I met with, who's really not involved day-to-day, his son runs the joint, and I should know his name cold. I think it's Gary. But the father was really cool. I got to talking to him, and I was asking about his business. And I was genuinely curious on the sit-down about, okay, my question was, you're a collision business, but why advertise? Like, people crash their car, and they got to go get it fixed, and they go to the phone book, and they just start thumbing down, like, okay, what's the one nearest me? And then I go get a couple estimates, and I'm done. And he explained, well, we do this now, we do that, and we do smaller repairs that people might not fix on their car that's not crucial to how your car runs, and we could do it affordably, and we do this, that, and the other, and here's how we differentiate our service. It was interesting to me. And then I started asking about, well, how'd you get into the business? And he chuckled. He says, well, when I was growing up, there was apparently no child labor laws. I go, really? He goes, yeah. I started working in the shop with my dad at age 12.
Sure.
And it's
learning the trade.
And it's just fantastic. And he, you know, they're from Minnesota, and they're a big Twins fan. So we got to talking about the Twins and Minnesota sports and whatnot. It was a nice, wonderful meeting. And I went to another client sales call that was actually at an ad agency. And this guy, Stephen Libby, who is the head of the ad agency, he is a trip, man. He runs triathlons. He's muscle. He's like, he played semi-pro football for fun.
Okay.
For fun. I said, yeah. I'm like, so you played some football? He goes, yeah. And I go, at what college? He goes, oh no, just some traveling semi-pro teams in the area.
Mm-hmm.
I said, get the fuck out of here.
He was probably a great high school player and just thought, why not?
He's
play a little bit more.
Yeah, he's totally great shape, and he talked a mile a minute. I mean, he came into that meeting jacked up, and so he was talking about all these patents he has for slogans for his clients, because the client that's going to be joining us is a law firm, Hartley and Pecora, and he was saying, yeah, I'm about to tell them what their slogan is. And he ended up showing them their slogan that moment, and it was obstructing injustice, you know, because they're former prosecutors turned defense attorneys that know how the system is stacked against your average Joe citizen. And so they want to represent them to give them a fighting chance to not get steamrolled by the system, obstructing injustice. And I said, and this is after the client had left, I go, so did they know that was the slogan? And he goes, oh, no, they were learning about as you were. And I said, well, what if they didn't like it? He goes, they have no choice. I go, really? He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, I charge like 15 grand, you know, starting lowest fee, and that's if I'm just dealing with a small business. Then it's 30 grand if I have to go through a board of governors. It's 60 grand if I have to deal with a CEO. He said, I don't have time for this. I'm the one that writes these. I'm the one that knows how to position these companies. If you knew how to do it, you wouldn't be in my office right now.
That's right.
And I said, God damn, that is fascinating. And he was talking about how he and his coworker, obviously very fit guys, and they go on whatever adventures. He's like, I went scuba diving and I brought up this 12-pound lobster. And he was telling this tale of how it would flip and it would drag him another foot or two below. He's trying to get to the surface with it and everything like that. And it was a great story. And as we were about to leave, I say to him, I go, By the way, Stephen, either I get a picture of that lobster or that story never happened. And he laughed and he goes, don't worry, you'll get the story. But it was interesting that the office they were in, Ron, was in this converted restaurant. It was like an old bakery house or something like that. And it was a part computer shop, part ad agency. They did web design. And it was they had a whole team of people in there, young people working away just happily there. I mean, he employs 30 or 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a big studio in the back that does video work and everything else. And I was just blown away. I was like, this is fucking great. This guy and built this business.
And those are the kinds of people that you have always enjoyed meeting. Like when we go on golf trips together, Pinehurst, or when we have caddies, you always seem to find out things about people that otherwise wouldn't be known because you ask questions. And when people find that you're genuinely interested in them, they tend to open up and people have so much to offer. Now, I have two things to say. One, my father, the criminal defense attorney, is, you know, what criminal defense attorneys are known as, Liberty's last champion.
That's a good one. Ding, ding, ding.
Yep. And two, you know, people being an Indiana boy, I always have to get that in there too. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
People think that middle America is just, you just fly over and you look down and you think, oh my God, it must be boring down there. There must not be much going on. They have no fucking clue. I tell you, you go to Naples, Florida, and look at the homes there. These are second homes. You go to Lake Charlevoix, Petoskey, up in the UP of Michigan. These are summer homes. You know, my friends and the successful people. One of our members, George Callis, just went to the Crooked Stick member guest, as he does every year. He's the guest of Mike Milliken, who is an attorney in Indianapolis. And he comes back. We were just hitting balls together on the range today. And he looked at me. He had this Crooked Stick old school hat with the rope and the high profile structured front and an old patch on it, like the old, those old
like
ones
the
would
Amana,
have been.
Like the Amana Raider Range hats that they would pay pros to wear and give them free appliances.
Yep. And he looked me right in the eye again and he said, I love where you're from. He said, the people are the nicest people in the world. And he said, in that golf course, and you guys do things the right way. But no. You know, like Bill Mayer, what did he say? You know, they all want to be us, you know, us Hollywood types. That's bullshit. It's bullshit. Yeah. Not going to get political, but the middle America is literally the backbone. And you are not going to find more kind and uniquely interesting and warm people than you're going to find in the state of Wisconsin and in the state of Minnesota and in the state of Indiana. And right down the line.
Oh, you didn't mention Illinois.
I was going to go right down the line. Then I kind of went, went over and up a little. Now Illinois, the same, but they have Chicago. So sometimes I skip over.
I know.
But Chicago is such a great place. I mean, too.
Well, anyway,
I'm
you know,
so
the
glad
bottom,
you get to experience all that. You know?
I was humbled. And I was also, here's the other thing too, is, you know, I'm on these sales calls and there's usually the direct account executive and there's the sales manager that are with me. And I'm sort of the show pony, like, hey, this guy, Zabe, and here's his new show. And some people know me already and love me. Some people kind of know but don't know anything. Some people are just like, I don't know this guy. But I'm there on these sales calls making sure I just shut the fuck up and don't say the wrong thing, you know, because I don't want to blurt out something that, like, sets things off on the wrong note.
Yeah, maybe a little East Coast cynicism or something.
But it was interesting because – it was just interesting, an interesting array of businesses that do a lot of different things. And truthfully, I know that radio, and I know that I can help their business because I believe in the power of radio testimonial advertising that sticks with people, that helps you stand out from the crowd and just the noise of here's an ad, there's an ad, that kind of thing.
Well, one other question about that. Do you think that these people are advertising now because you are on the air and these men, like this gentleman who owns the ad agency, although he's doing an ad for a law firm, but are the people who run or own the law firm fans of yours? And they said, all right, Zabin's on the radio.
Yes.
I want to get. Okay, see,
yeah. Yeah. Right. So I'd say 70% of them are.
Love it. Love it.
So now pressure's on me to fucking deliver. No,
well,
no
you just
pressure.
Do your thing. That's the thing. You just be you.
That's what they say. Just be you. It'll all work out. Trust me. I sit there and go, all right, I got to deliver for these people. I mean, these are businesses that are giving us their hard-earned money to advertise to help grow their business, and I don't take that lightly. You know what I mean?
But they want you to be whom you have been or who you have been. And so if you start going and changing, then that's not going to be what they want.
No.
So if you try too hard or get out of your norm, then it's going to be, shit, we didn't ask for this. No. We want Zabin, who he is and what he is.
Right. You got to try medium, as I like to say.
Yes.
Try medium and don't overtry. So before we get into the Hogan documentary, and it's unbelievable what I saw in it, do you want to talk College World Series? You were just watching that.
Yeah, but it dudded out. Vanderbilt. I just came upstairs to
who
take
are you
the
rooting
call,
for?
And it was. I was rooting for Michigan just because Why? They're they're one strike away from not even getting in the tournament against Illinois, and they're trailing. They have one strike left, and they.
But
come
you're
back,
a Hoosier.
Win that game.
You're a Hoosier. You should look at everyone Michigan as a bunch of heathen scum.
No, not at all.
You're not provincial like that?
Not in the least, especially when,
if you went to IU,
teams.
If you had gone to IU, you would be that way with Michigan. You wouldn't root. If Michigan was on fire, you wouldn't root for somebody to piss on them. Trust me.
I don't know about that.
Really?
I essentially went to Indiana because it's all I ever knew growing up. You know, I went to every Indiana football, basketball game I knew.
Okay.
But I was more rooting for these. You know, it's hard to root against anybody in college baseball because these kids are out there busting their ass, and it means so much to them. But there was an entry, and you know how our conversations often come back to officiating. There was a third strike non-call in the fourth inning. So bad that the pitcher, the catcher, the infielders started to run off the field.
Oh, God.
Ball four walks. Or actually, I think it would have been the third strike. Instead, it was called a ball. The next pitch was a ball. Walked in to make it 2-1. I mean, it was a strike. I guess the umpire called it low. This was tonight.
Oh, okay. Because there's apparently a blown call in game two. Somebody alerted me to that replay didn't fix. And I just said
marginal. But this one anyway, it was just a 2-1 walk, and then guess what? Next batter, bases loaded, right up the middle, scores 4-1 instead of 1-1.
That sucks.
In the dugout, up to bat, 4-1, done. So it was great. It's a neat thing. I want to go to Omaha. I want to take my son out and watch it.
He would love it.
I don't know about the aluminum bats. I still kind of wish they used wood.
You know why they don't, right?
Because of money.
Yeah, they break a ton and they cost a lot of money. When I first found that out, and I was asking why don't they do that, they said you wouldn't believe how many you go through and you wouldn't believe how expensive they are. And I said, well, try me. And then they ran through the number. I was like, oh, okay, shit. Now, they do make composite bats that are not aluminum that respond with the same general characteristics of wood but don't break, but I guess they have not adopted those.
Right. And another thing, I tried to watch as much of the World Series as I could, but that whistling cocksucker.
Who is
it? Know about
because
this?
I didn't
his
watch
name,
it.
Put it this way, his first name is Preacher. That's all you need to know.
God.
Chris Childers, who I enjoy, he and Rick Neuheisel on whatever it is on ESPNU.
Yeah.
I listen every day. And of course I can't think of the name. He lives in Nashville, and before the College World Series started, he said, listen to me right now. He said, there are two fans that come to these games, every home game, even go on the road, and they whistle nonstop. It's incessant whistle over and over. And the crowd responds to it.
What does it sound
like? Point. And then the fans go clap, clap, clap. And it's over and over, and it's got so bad, Steve, that they were threatened at the College World Series. They threatened to throw him out, but it became this big thing. And of course, the politically correct bullshit that we're dealing with in society, we can't throw him out. It is so annoying. It's unbelievably annoying, and it goes on and on and on.
Let me guess, is he a white guy or a black guy?
He's a white dude. He's a jackass.
Threw his ass out. I thought for sure you're like politically correct, like he'd be a black guy.
No,
you're like,
just,
you can't.
No.
You better not throw a black guy out of a game. No, fuck him. I am of the mindset of we need more totalitarianism in our society where we're just going to say for the good of everybody, you and your little individualistic, whatever you're doing, enough already. You're bothering people.
Steve, it is an incredible nuisance, and it is so annoying to watch this game because all you hear, and I swear to you, the announcers, even sometimes in mid-sentence, they stop talking. And you can tell they're looking at each other like, why are we having to talk over this? So that's anyway, it goes ridiculous. On and on and on. It's a bunch of bullshit, but Vanderbilt wins unless something happened in the last bottom half and the bottom of nine, but not likely. The pitcher for Vanderbilt, the freshman, is a beast. He's the one who threw against Duke. He had 19 strikeouts and a no-hitter. I don't know if you know about him. He's only a freshman.
I have heard about him. So Vanderbilt has won. I just checked it online. 4-1, your final.
No, it can't be 4-1.
Oh, no, sorry. 4-1 to force game three.
That was yesterday. Yeah, tonight was probably 7-2. 8-2, yeah.
Okay. All right, so Vanderbilt, your winner. Okay, so...
enough of that.
All right, well, anyway, there's that. Okay, Ben Hogan documentary. Where do I begin? First of all, I know the shape of the Ben Hogan story from the equally outstanding Back Nine at Cherry Hills HBO documentary that chronicled a lot of Hogan's upbringing and everything else. So there wasn't a whole ton of new ground plowed, but there was some new footage that I saw that it blew my mind. For example, they showed Hogan hitting a shot out of what I swear was the tributary to Ray's Creek on 13 at Augusta from the 1940s, and it was shaggier than a porn star's snatch from the 1970s. It was like all weeds and shit.
Deep throat.
Yes. And I'm like, wow, I've never seen footage like that. You know, there was varying quality of the footage that they had been able to recover, and some of it was remarkably pristine from being from so long ago. And the other thing that blew me away was they had some instructional footage, and it's not video, it's film, of Hogan hitting shots both away from the camera on the range and then right over the camera at the range. And they are remarkably clear, and they are in slow motion, which at the time you would have had to run film through your camera at an overdrive speed. And that's how they did slow motion back in the day. They basically jammed that film stock through there super fast. And it looks so gorgeous. And what I also noticed was how the ball curved upwards back in the day.
Yep.
It did. And then it would ski ramp up because of how the balls were made and the clubs and everything else. Whereas today's game, it's a high launch tumble off the face 330 yards in the air.
Well, Steve, I'll start by saying that the narrator was phenomenal. So kudos right off the bat for whomever it was that they selected to be the narrator.
Okay.
It's always important. You know, you've got like a Tom Selleck type. I don't know who did this, but he was great. But the way that the piece opened up, the part one, and the way – and they captured it right away by saying that what is it about certain people that – makes them live on in infamy after their death or right. to, you know, to, and that is something. And, you know, again, we all know about Ben Hogan, but we didn't know enough about Ben Hogan until this was done.
What made him such a driven man? Where
well,
did
it's
he come
a story.
From?
It says, I mean, it starts out with the blacksmith, you know,
his father was a blacksmith right around the turn of the Industrial Revolution when the automobile was introduced. And he suddenly couldn't find work because people weren't riding horses to work and didn't need shoes for their horses. And so out of desperation, he said, well, time to swallow a bullet. And young Ben found his dad.
Well, there's and that is up for, remember, the niece, the great niece said that she said it was her dad, which was Royal. How about the names? Princess, Royal, and then Ben.
That is funny.
I thought those names were interesting.
Actor Kyle Chandler is who narrated.
Okay, well, he did great. How about older brother Royal? He quit school at, 14 to deliver office supplies. You know, we're doing whatever we can to make
help
ends
mom
meet
out.
Here.
Yeah.
And then how about Hogan is selling newspapers. He's 9 years old. he's selling newspapers at the train station, and then a friend of his that he knows is caddying at this club, Glen Garden Country Club, and the course is 7 miles away from where the Hogan family lives. So what's Ben do? He walks every morning. He walks 7 miles so he can get there early, be guaranteed to get a bag.
Double loop whenever he could.
Carry a newspaper.
What was
keep
it,
a 20, newspaper with.
Was it 25 cents?
65 cents.
Yeah.
And which then, was, he said, which was double what he could make selling newspapers till midnight. And he would keep a newspaper because he was double dipping it sometimes. And he'd take the newspaper with him. And he, if he got there before the course opened, he would lay down in a bunker and sleep in a bunker on a newspaper, use half of it to lay on and the other half to cover himself with.
Unbelievable. You know, I was only half watching this first part, and I've got 10 more minutes to go, but I caught the rest of the meat of it. The other thing, and I'm not sure if this documentary touched on it, but they did talk about it at the on the back nine at Cherry Hills. The most amazing part of the Hogan story is that he's struggling to make it on the mini tours back in the day, and he had $500 to his name. And his wife, Valerie, and he set out to go try to win some tournaments, win some money. And right before his final tournament, that he was about out of money, and he wakes up, they come out of their little motel and finds their car jacked up on blocks, tires have been stolen, all this other stuff, and Valerie says to him, well, maybe, Ben, this is a sign that it wasn't meant to be. And Hogan looked at her icily and said, I said we'll play until we're out of money. And they weren't yet quite out of money, and so they found some tires. They got to the next tournament, and lo and behold, he won it.
No, you know, he didn't find tires. He got a ride from Byron Nelson.
Oh, he did?
It talks about that in the show. Picked him up, and then shortly thereafter, he won 265. No, I'm jumping ahead. He then met the guy who owns the department stores. You must maybe haven't gotten to this part yet, but the guy, this guy who opened department stores in Fort Worth and some surrounding areas, was a member at the club, and he enjoyed Hogan as a caddy because he could, relate to his story, small guy, scrappy. And long story short, that's where Hogan got his money when he, you know, each time he went back out on tour. And they even had a letter, a copy of the letter that Ben Hogan wrote. So, so well written. And asking, you know, it's hard for me to ask this, but we had discussed it. Could you give me some money? And he did. And yeah. He went out and won $265. There's so many layers. We've got two hours of this show. There's so many layers to this.
By the way, how great a move through the ball did Ben Hogan have, especially for a young guy? And even though sometimes the speed of film stock is deceptive because it's a little bit sped up, but you can tell he's cutting through that ball just ferociously.
The move left, the shoulders, the way that he unwinds, first of all, how he loaded,
right.
How he torqued and loaded right, and then the way that the left leg posted and the shoulders turned and the way that the club, and he had so much lag. That's what I didn't realize. The club is literally on the back of his, on his shoulder blades almost, maintaining that angle. And then firing left. And then the story about how, you know, he was tired of hooking it. The reason he was so small, the reason he was hooking is because he learned in a long drive contest at the caddy tournament that he could hit it farther if he hooked the ball. And ultimately, they said, you know, he couldn't get his four wood off the ground. So he dedicated himself to weakening his left hand.
Yeah.
And he found the secret, you know, what's the secret? Was it the cupped left wrist, or was it the right knee, or what was it?
Everyone would always ask, what was the secret you talked about? And he's like, the secret's in the dirt. And they're like, what does that mean? And he was like, it means you got to dig it out of the dirt one divot at a time. You know,
right.
He talked about how,
Dave.
He just talked about how, you know, in his, one of his last interviews there, that interview that they have the videotape of. From the Byron Nelson, I forget what year that was, the last...
1987.
Yeah, 87. You know, he would talk about how, you know, some days I'd go out there and everything would be right, and I'd figured it out. The next day I went out and I did the same thing. Didn't work. And he'd be like, then I went back out the next day and went back to work. He's like, some guys might work 2 hours a day. I'll work eight. And the way he would say that had this insane...
The steely eyes. Well, you hear these tour players like Tom Byram and these guys... How about the story where Mark O'Meara says that he was hitting balls in front of him and he was nervous and he had just won a tournament over in Japan. He was playing some of the best golf of his life up to date. And he turned around and looked at Hogan and he said, well, what do you think, Mr. Hogan? And Hogan said, awful. As he's smoking his cigarette.
Right, right.
And Faxon,
exactly.
Faxon talking about hitting.
Okay, there's so much of this I haven't seen. We're going to have to do a part two next week.
Oh, gosh,
I gave it a half-assed lick and a promise.
Oh, you
behind.
Did. That's all right. Well, let me tell you this.
Go ahead.
I was watching with my son. Winston's really good about if Papa says you need to watch this.
He'll sit
he's
down
11
and, watch
and he'll do it. Okay. And so we watched it on Monday, part one, and sure as heck, we went out the next day and we played golf. He's, you know, we woke up in the morning, Pop, can we go play golf? I said, damn right, let's go. So we go out and this kid is trying like hell to swing like Ben Hogan. I mean, he's
really
trying to, trying to create the lag and trying to swing left. And he's already got a really good swing. So I'm like, shit, I don't want this Hogan documentary to mess up. You know, to mess up what's already good.
But, the other little things that I took a couple mental notes that just little dumb things. There was a great shot, great footage of a stymie.
Yeah, the
where
chip
you had
over.
And Hogan chipped over a guy from 2 feet, like
reached in and got his ball and shook hands.
That's crazy to think. I know the greens were slower back then, but to have the touch. It's hard enough to make a two-footer that's flat, and to make a two-footer chipping it over a guy?
That was in the 46 PGA Championship when he beat Porky Oliver.
Porky Oliver.
And the funny thing is he beats him, and he's shaking his hand afterwards, and Porky's like, it looks like Porky just won. He's so happy.
I know.
So they cut to the trophy ceremony, and Porky Oliver has his arm around Ben Hogan, looking at the cameras like, I just got my ass beat and I don't give a shit.
I don't care, exactly.
I'm standing up here with Hogan. Don January said he was paired with him. God, I forget the last round of maybe the Open or the Masters. And he said, I couldn't sleep the night before. He said, it was like playing with God.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I mean, Hogan and Bobby Jones, the only two golfers to ever have a ticker tape parade in downtown New York City.
That's right. And that was after he returned from Carnoustie in 53, I believe, after he won in the Open Championship at Carnoustie.
That's another thing. So he won all these tournaments. The only one he really hadn't won was the Open. And a couple pros are like, you know, to complete your legacy, you need to win this one. He's like, all right, I'll give it a try. He goes over there having never played in Scotland, never played Lynx golf, had to qualify while over there for the event, got very sick. It was rainy and cold. Was wearing two cardigan sweaters. They didn't have the moisture wicking Gore-Tex back
then. No, sir.
And first time he ever saw Carnoustie, maybe one of the hardest golf courses on the planet, just blows to a win. Plays number five, the par five, left of the bunkers through this narrow Hogan's Alley. He's like, "What's the big deal?" Boom! It's right there, and is treated like
every day, every round he did it.
Treated like a god. Because they're like, oh my God, the legend of Ben Hogan. The crowds were amazing. And he gave this great speech afterwards about what a treat it was. And then Ron took a boat home. You know why?
Yes, he did.
That's how you got over there back then.
Yep.
Ain't nobody flying to Europe.
The wee Iceman. That's
right.
What they
the wee Iceman, exactly. He took a boat home. It's like, okay, you want me to go win this thing? Yeah, sure. No problem. And then I'll take a boat home. Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, and the thing about the 53 Open also is one of the reasons he went over there was because, you know, the dates, I believe that the Open ended on like the Open Championship, the British Open ended on like the 4th.
It didn't conflict.
Well, it conflicted with the PGA Championship.
That's right, it did.
He didn't play in the PGA. And the reason why he chose to go over there is because the PGA, you were having to play 36 holes a day.
And it was too much
play.
on his legs after the accident. Yeah. Yeah. So it was almost a little bit of good fortune that he did, but pretty amazing. Okay. A couple other how'd you likes real quick. How'd you like when he won the U.S. Open after his accident? As he makes the final putt, some dipshit on the side of the green sprints.
Tries to get the ball.
The green.
Most unbelievable shit I've ever seen. My son's like, what is he doing? I said, he's trying to get the ball. It reminds me of the, like, the world. It reminds me of when Reggie Jackson hits the home run and those wackos at Yankee Stadium are running around him, chasing him around the bases, you know?
It's like, that's crazy. And he wasn't the only one trying to steal the ball. Everybody rushed in. They're like, let's get it. Oh, my God.
And that's before the internet. These guys just wanted it. Although, who knows, they had all those old golf shops in, over in Scotland where you could take it and sell it.
But, so that was crazy. There was another shot that made me laugh where I guess Hogan is shaking the hands and after he won a tournament, and I guess like the tournament director is standing like 6 inches from his face, and of course he's burning a grit and he's got smoke just falling out of his mouth. 2 inches from Hogan's face. And I'm like, what is that, dude? But that's the 50s for you, right?
It's just incredible. And I sent this picture of you, but what was neat is in 51, they looked back on the 1950 season, and it really, for me, it was emotional a little bit. My son is, like, I keep mentioning Winston, but he's my only child, my best friend.
All right, Ronnie.
He said, Papa, there's Grandpa. And I said, what? So thankfully for DVR, I took it back. And the headline of the newspaper said, the thrills and highlights of the 1950 season, or a sports season. And the newspaper was all about sports. And it talked about Hogan's 50 win. And my grandfather's picture from the 1950 Indy 500, him in his little flimsy helmet, his paper mache helmet, basically, with his goggles, was right there on the front page.
I'm looking at the picture, the still cap you sent me. That, Ronnie, the fact that your son spotted that is so amazing, man.
It's just, you know, anybody who cannot understand what the past means to us as people, and anybody who cannot have an interest in history and especially as it relates to sports and, for me, war. I mean, if you are going to go through the rest of your life blind to this and to these people and what they did and the sacrifices and the achievements, if you're going to live only today, then I don't want to be around you. I don't want to be a friend of yours. I mean, there's so much to learn.
Yeah,
and
it's
to,
amazing.
To learn about this man. He almost dies. He gets a head-on collision.
Right.
He jumps over, covers his wife. Luckily, the steering column goes through the seat. He would have been killed, and 59 days in the hospital, two double fractured pelvis, fractured left ankle.
And the doctors are like, you'll never walk again.
You'll never walk again.
And he's like, hold my beer, and then just starts at it. You went out.
Hold on.
Cutting out. Shake your phone. Okay. Go ahead. Instead. We got you. Now we're back. Go ahead. Oh, shit, these cell phones are the worst.
I'm here.
All right, try it one more time.
All right, the vein.
Unbelievable. These cell phones suck. They just totally suck. As soon as you start talking, it starts cutting in and out.
Maybe I'm talking too loudly.
No, I don't. It's not that. It's
well, they.
Okay.
They fly the doctor in.
Hold on a second. I'm going to call you right back. All right, this is we take this brief interlude to once again curse our telecommunications industry that is not doing their job. Ron's at home. I'm at home. This shouldn't be that hard, people. Uh-oh. Oh, boy. Still skitterish. Do you have a home phone, Ron?
I have a good signal.
Okay. So let me switch gears, and I'm going to do a proper watching of Hogan. I got to get you on record on a basketball front about this rumor that the NBA, not rumor, but the NBA is thinking about doing a radical reworking of the regular season for their 75th anniversary year, which will be 2021 and 2022. That would include a mid-season cup-style tournament, which I presume would be international in nature, and then some kind of play-in tournament for the playoffs at the end of the year to spice things up. And they're talking about, to accommodate those things, they're talking about shortening the season to perhaps as few as 58 games. Your thoughts?
I think it's a good idea. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I just can't believe you think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I think it's a good idea is because it were the wear and tear on the bodies. That's what it has to do with. If they're going to have these superstars, they need them on the court. And if they're going to have them beat their brains, it reminds me of Airplane when Kareem's up.
You tried dragging Walton up and down the court for 40 minutes.
You tell your dad to drag Lanier and Walton.
That's right.
Listen, kid, I bust my ass every night.
All right, but here's a couple things. One, I want to see the details of what they're planning. It's from what I've read so far, it's very vague. Secondly, if you're going to have a cup-style tournament mid-year, like soccer, I'm assuming this is going to be like Champions League, where they'll get the champion of the Spanish league and the champion of this league, and they'll play the Rockets and the Spurs and whatever. How are you going to get these guys to care? Like, that's the biggest thing. You got to get our players to care, and I have a hard time seeing them do that. The other thing is, why is it now we have to have load management? Whereas Michael Jordan played 82 of 82, 82 of 82, 82 of 82 for as far as the eye can see, and he got shot out of the sky by three guys on at least a dozen drives every night.
Yep. And they didn't travel in the luxury and style that they are now.
No. Now, some would say, well, Zabe, the athletes of today, their bodies are faster cars. They are more finely tuned Ferraris. And so more things break, more soft tissue, more connective tissue, that kind of stuff. You know, the basketball that you loved in the 80s, it's great and all, but it wasn't as strenuous as today's game. It wasn't as explosive. It wasn't as tough on joints and everything else. That's a theory I'm willing to at least buy to a certain extent.
Yeah. You know what else they might be fearful of is players sitting out. Remember all that stuff? Those guys were sitting out a few years ago and like LeBron.
They still are. It's just been given a name called load management. So if you're load managing 20 games off out of an 82-game schedule, how many games will you take off of a 58-game schedule?
I know. Yeah. Well, maybe you won't need to take any off. That's the thing.
Well, I'm all for new ideas. I'm all for interesting stuff. But if I'm a league, I'd be very wary about ever giving up ground. This is a business, Ron. They're in it to make money. These players make insane salaries. I would not want to be dialing back the number of games voluntarily.
All right, but Steve, you know why they make insane money. It's not because of ticket sales. It's not because of suite TV. Sales. TV and jerseys. And those.
I don't think the jerseys are a big pie slice.
Well,
I
didn't mean jerseys. I didn't mean jerseys. I meant merchandise. Oh, merchandise sales are gigantic. It's gigantic stuff in
compared
the NBA,
to television.
But it's TV. So who? No. It doesn't compare to television, but it's a big part of it. But let's be honest. I mean, who is watching Pelicans now? They might be watching.
I bought the Pelican package for next year.
Right. I mean, who's watching Portland and Denver at 10:30 at night, here on the East Coast? Well, me.
Right.
But who really is watching it? And so, maybe it's the product is getting stale.
I agree. I don't begrudge how much they make. I'm just saying they've got a great league in which there's they run the league on small rosters, 12 guys. They have a huge lucrative TV deal. That's great. They play a huge number of games, 82. So you carve that pie up by 12 guys, then random jabrones are making $7 million a year. Good for them.
Yeah.
But if I'm the league, Ron, I'd be very careful about voluntarily dialing back the number of games.
Yeah, there has to be a reason, and I'm looking forward to hearing what the reason is. Now, thinking about hockey, could you imagine? You talk about getting your ass kicked and getting your brains beat in and how hard it is on a body.
Oh, yeah.
82 games.
Well, Brooks.
They're not changing. You know why? Because they love to play hockey. Well, I've talked to Bondra about it. He loved it. They love it. They love it. They're like kids.
Yeah, Brooks Orpik just retired for the Capitals, and he said that in his final season with the Caps, he couldn't walk up and down stairs on game nights, but he figured out a way to get on the ice and then deal with the pain, and then he said he would just figure out after the game how to deal with it. That's how bad he was. He finally retired. Good for him. Ron, we are out of time tonight. As always, I love the visits. Thank you for your time and thoughts, and we'll check in next week, okay?
Thanks, Steve.
All right, buddy. See you.
Bye-bye.
We can end on this today. Pour one out for Bob Lee, one of the OGs, one of the original gangsters at the four-letter Big Red Sports Network in the Connecticut Woods. Bob Lee announced on Wednesday that he is quitting the network. Not quitting, he's retiring from ESPN after 40 years. And he does so with no malice in his heart whatsoever. And better yet, he does so without any health issues that could be the reason or the excuse for it. I don't know if excuse is the right word, but here's what he said. Across 40 years, I've enjoyed a professional journey unimaginable. When I joined ESPN on its first weekend of existence in 1979. By the way, his goodbye note on Twitter, it's so on point. It's so Bob Lee. It's so brand perfect for Bob Lee. Each day since has been a unique adventure, one I embraced for the challenge and unequaled fun of a job like no other. Now it is time for a change. I'll be retiring from ESPN as of the end of the month. To be clear, this is entirely my decision. I enjoy the best of health and the many blessings of friends and family, and it is in that context that I'm making this change. To Jimmy Pitaro and his senior leadership team at ESPN, my sincere personal thanks for their understanding and patience over the past months. Through the decades and my innumerable experiences at ESPN, I have built many deep and fulfilling friendships. You know who you are. I hope you also know how much you mean to me. We have shared an American story, writes Bob Lee, unlike any other. And we will continue to do so in the years ahead. He ends by saying, it's time, as they say, I've been gifted by our viewers and consumers with a precious commodity, your trust. To be invited into your homes was a privilege I never took for granted, one I worked each day to uphold. Thank you for that. In September, I signed off my last show by saying, I'll catch you on the flip side. Now it's time to take that vinyl off the turntable, parentheses, ask your folks, flip it over and drop the needle on the B side. Hey, Bob, I think everybody still knows what records are, even the millennials. There are always great cuts and hidden gems on the B side. Thank you for a great run. I'm Bob Lee. Listen, I like Bob Lee. I thought he did really good work. My only beef with Bob Lee is I thought towards the end, the last 5 years or so of his run there, he became too agenda-driven in their reporting. I thought they harangued on certain topics like the Redskins' name way too much. Bob Lee reportedly was one of the few Republicans, or at least conservatives, that were on staff at ESPN. I don't know if that's true or not. It doesn't really matter to me. But I just thought that towards the end, the constant haranguing on both the Redskins' name, concussions, and other agenda-driven issues kind of turned me off to outside the lines. They did a lot of other good work, though, and they had to fight, I'm sure, a hell of a battle because under the previous regime, the coke-snorting John Skipper regime, he was totally in bed with all the properties that they had the rights to, the NFL, the NBA, etc. Bob Lee and his like couldn't dig too hard or too deep on certain things that would make those entities look bad or in a negative light. But if this is not a health thing, if it's his decision, if he said he really enjoyed the job, he just wants to do something else, I think the question has to be asked, which is, so why? Why now? Is there no more reporting to be done? Surely there is. It's a new day at ESPN where Pitaro seems to have an understanding of, hey, some of the shit we were doing before didn't make sense and was no good. You'd think he would possibly stay. Unless maybe Bob Lee looks at the network and just shakes his head and says, jeez, what has this network become? Look at the low rent, cheap click, trash entity ESPN is during the day. Sure, at night, SportsCenter, Van Pelt Center late at night, quality, straightforward, good sports product. Everything starting in the morning forward, shit on a stick. Really? This is the best we can do? Maybe that's Bob Lee's thinking. John Owrand of Sports Business Journal told me today on the Steve Zabin show on the Team 980 in D.C., he said he thinks that Bob Lee was just weighed down by a lot of the staff cuts that had gone on at ESPN. The deep cost-cutting in the wake of, oh, shit, we're overspending for everything, and people are cutting the cord, and we've got to dial back. Perhaps there's another big round of cuts coming, and Bob Lee just wouldn't feel comfortable being there while that all that goes on. We asked today on the show, well, what do you think he makes? Like, was he, did he have survivor's guilt? Did he have salary guilt? What does he make? And Solly thought it was less than $1 million. I said, Bob Lee better make $1 million. As long as he's been at the network and as influential as he is, he should fire his agent if he's not making at least $1 million a year. Somebody then, I guess, looked it up, or they maybe searched it. They're reportedly $4 million a year, which I think is a fair price for a guy that does what he does on television. $5 million for Beadle, $6 million for Greenberg. No, those are complete wastes of money. But I think Bob Lee earned his salary there at ESPN. So pour one out for Bob Lee and do your best animatronic Bob Lee. I'm Bob Lee. Head up, head to the side, and down. And the pitch goes up, and I'm... Nah, he was fine on the air. A little bit animatronic at times, but not terrible. That will do it for me today. Thank you for downloading and for being a loyal subscriber and evangelist for the Zabecast. Tomorrow, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you $1.33, give or take. I think I'd love to have you on board for Fridays, but I'm not gonna force you. I'm not going to shame you. Shame. You're shaming me. Just kidding. If you want to subscribe to Fridays, be a subscriber to the Zabecast to get all 5 days. Be my guest. We'd love to have you. Go to Zabe.com or the Zabecast and subscribe. I'm not even sure how you do it. You'll find a way. Email me if you can't do it. Otherwise, thanks for another great week of listening. Do spread the word about the Zabecast, and we'll add more to the big family. Have a great weekend if I don't talk to you, and otherwise, we will see you next time. Let me run around and put your car on cruise and lay back, because it's summertime.